Absolute Power, of course, was a huge success. Was that the first time? Was that your first? That was your first successful novel, though. I'm guessing that the life of a writer, getting that first big publishing contract, is always challenging. Was it that way for you as well?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I'd spent most of my career writing short stories, and there's not a huge market for those. Even when you sell one of them, they don't really give you cash. They give you free copies of the magazine with your name on it. Very hard to eat that. So I became a lawyer and sort of had a split personality. I was a lawyer during the day, and I wrote at night. And I moved from short stories to screenplays and screenplays to trying my hand at novels. Absolute Power was the first novel I ever finished. And obviously it was the first one that was published, but it was a long road. I was an overnight success. It just took me about 6,000 nights to get there.
Right, right. It's a lonely life for a writer, and it takes a lot of discipline. Will you be talking about that at all at your appearance on the island?
I will, and that's why these festivals are great, too, because I spend a lot of time alone and working inside my own head and putting things down on paper, so it's nice to get out and meet readers and go out in public and talk about these things. Just a nice balance for my life.
Let me ask you, your novels are really thrilling and really gripping. How do you develop the technique for that? Not just coming up with the characters, but also the outline for the story, the plot, in a way that it sort of cracks the code. It holds the reader's attention and it's marketable to a mass audience.
I think you learn as you go. Writing is a craft. You're never going to master it. You're just an apprentice for life, really. And I think that I love writing, and so I'm always sort of thinking about the nuances of how to tell stories, how to tell them better, how to capture someone's attention, how to make the story flow easily, how to have twists and turns. It's something that I work on all the time, and hopefully I get better at it each time. And it's really difficult for me to sit down and tell someone how I do what I do, because I do a lot of it instinctively at this point. I know how to end a chapter and how to get you right into a story. Because a million little decisions go into that, and it'll be very difficult to communicate that to someone. And I'll try to do that as well as I can when I come down to Megan and talk about it. But I think the driving force for me is I love it so much, I'm always focused on it. My mind's always dwelling. It's almost maybe like a football player watching thousands of hours of game film, breaking down every play down to its smallest element, trying to learn something.
How do you come up with ideas? So do you meet a real person that sparks an idea for a plot line?
It could be as much or as simple as me walking down the street and seeing someone and talking to someone else, or someone walking through a door, or a car turning a corner. It may not be that exact thing I'm thinking about or looking at, but it will spark something in my head to say, you know, I see what's out there, but let me add a few little pixel dust and of imagination, and I'll come up with something original and new, and that's what I try to do. I read a lot. I'm voracious. I travel a lot. I meet a lot of people. Everything is potential story material. Coming up with ideas is relatively easy for a writer, I think, but at the end of the day, the really hard part is taking that idea and turning it into a long-form or a short-form story that someone would find gripping and interesting.
What about research? How much research goes into your novels?
Tons, and I don't sit behind my computer and do Wikipedia. You know, anybody could do that. So I get out in the trenches. I go and do stuff. I go and ride along and walk along with the police officers. I've gone down to military bases and trained with Rangers and jumped out of parachute towers and fired rifles and done as much as I could in the trenches, trying to sort of, you know, emulate what my characters will be doing, although I will draw the line at committing a felony. I've never done that. But it's doing as much as I can, and also interviewing people, talking to them, you know, one-on-one. Getting to their hearts and heads about why they do what they do. A lot of people who have interesting jobs, they don't really write things down about how they go about their business or their experiences. The only way to get to that is you have to talk to them.
Yeah.
Spend time with them, and that's what I do.
Now, when you go through the Hollywood process and they adapt your books for film or TV, I've always heard that for writers that's just so wrenching because they take it over and they put their own spin on it. Has it been that way for you as well?
Well, you know, Absolute Power was a big budget Warner Brothers production with Clint Eastwood, and it was a joy to watch him build a story and do what he did, and it was a lot of fun sort of being on the sidelines cheering for them. I had another film, Wish You Well, was made into a film. It was more of a smaller budget, independent. I actually wrote the screenplay. That was a great experience. I was there on the set every day and learned a lot of the process. It was very different from a big budget production. I had a television series based on my King of Maxwell books on TNT last summer, and that was a whole other different experience. That was, you know, for the small screen, but a lot of the same technical things go into it, the casting and all that. And I got a chance to work with a great producer, Shane Brennan, who does the NCIS, NCIS LA franchise. So for me, the bottom line is that I control it to the extent that I don't have to sell anything to Hollywood. But once you do, you have to realize it's a collaborative affair. They do what they do. You need to give them the material, and they can take it. So long as they're sort of true to the characters and true to the story, I'm fine with them changing things, because they'll have to change things. And what I try to do is align myself with people who really appreciate the material, so I know they appreciate it and love it as much as I do. They will be as faithful as they can be to it. I don't just willy-nilly go out and throw something out of the highest bidder and walk away with a big check, and I have no idea how they're going to adapt it. I meet with these people, I talk to them, and really find out what their take is and perspective is on the material.
Now, in addition to your novels for adults, you've also had success writing for kids. You've got a new book coming out called The Finisher. What's that about?
It's a totally fantasy world. I spent 5 years writing and sold it under a pseudonym, by the way, because I wanted publishers to buy it for the book and not just for the name.
Oh, what's your pseudonym?
My pseudonym is Janus Pope, and that's... The book will be published under my name, but it was sold under Janus Pope. Janus was a Roman god of two faces, one looking backward and one looking forward. And I thought that was, since I was sort of hiding my identity, that made sense. the surname Pope was just sort of that Catholic thing. So it's as simple as that sometimes.
what's it all about?
Well, The Finisher has Vega Jane. She's 14. I don't use the word years. I use sessions. 14 sessions old. She lives in a village called Wormwood. And around Wormwood is the Quag, and the Quag is a dangerous place, and nobody ever goes into the Quag because you wouldn't survive. And that's all there is in the universe. It's just Wormwood and the Quag, and there's nothing beyond the Quag. So no one's ever visited Wormwood, and no one's ever left Wormwood until Vega Jane stumbles on some mysterious elements that might show that there is something beyond the Quag. And it's a whole. I bring my love of fantasy, classical fantasy, and literature to this book, all the beasts that I've created, and a lot of the character names are drawn from classical works of fantasy. If you're well-versed in, with Lewis Carroll and C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, you'll see references and allusions to their works and names in the book. It's one in the series. Scholastic is publishing, and they're absolutely over the moon about it, and the excitement has been tremendous from the public. So I'm pleased with that, and you're always a little, hesitant with you're a big name brand author in the adult world and moving over to the children. You think that, that reviewers will really skewer you, but the reviews have been fantastic.
That's great.
Hard reviews and, glowing reviews. So I'm really pleased with that. But I put my heart and soul into this book, and I think people will be surprised because when Scholastic bought it under the name Janus Pope, they thought I was a Brit. And they wanted me to come over from England to meet with them.
My That's
agent said,
good.
Well, he would be glad to meet with you, but he lives a lot closer.
Is it harder to write for kids than it is adults?
In certain ways, it is. I never write down to kids. They're too smart. And what thrilled kids, even 10 years ago, do not thrill kids today. So you have to really be on your A game. And the plotting and all that is what I would bring to an adult thriller. Obviously, the language is tempered down somewhat. But the character development and the plotting, the twists and the turns, and the research, voluminous research, even though it was a fantasy, are all at the level that I would bring with my adult books.
A pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
No, I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to coming down to May. It's a beautiful place down there, and we really enjoy our time there.